Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I'm your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, Roscoe Parker has shared a couple of stories about how his running and his faith have collided, made a difference in his life and the people around him. Well, today he picks up where he left off. Now, those stories were shared back in episodes 144 and 158, so it's been a while since we've heard from Roscoe, but we're going to catch up today. And then our culture has become obsessed with blaming others for anything we can pin on them. Sometimes rightfully, sometimes not. But what's next in those situations? I'm going to answer that question today in today's Dean's Thoughts. And joining me for that and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
So, Dean, I've had to go back and read scripture and read the part where God says he will never flood the earth again. Because I feel like the past 2 weeks, I'm ready to go get my hammer and boards and start building an ark around it.
You're no kidding, right?
It's been crazy.
Yeah. We just had a big tree that fell near our, it's right on the property line of our church.
Yeah.
And nobody can decide. It's actually the town's property where the tree fell. They went and got an estimate to get the tree cut, and it was $6,000.
Yeah. That's a big one.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. The ground here is just saturated.
Yeah. That's the
more
point.
Rain coming. And
yep.
So
my next door neighbor had a tree that fell in his yard. The same thing. It just fell over.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even windy when it fell over.
Yeah.
So,
So how's your week been?
Been good. What about you?
It's good.
Good.
It's very good.
Moving along. Good stuff. And we're going to do something more different in this podcast we've never done before.
Yeah.
We're going to share a snippet from another podcast.
And I've always wanted to do this.
Yeah.
And I've even thought, I need to send that to Dean, put that in the podcast. And
yeah.
Finally, last week, after all these great podcasts that I listened to, there was a clip and I thought, you know, we really need to put this on our podcast and talk about it.
It was
because it is something that needs to be talked about.
Yes. Sure. So relevant. Well, our post of the week this week comes from the same person that our post of the week was last week, and that is Rebecca Wang. She says, I broke in new shoes today after 6 months of use and 350 miles. It's time. The main reason I'm sharing today is seriously easy runs are so helpful, and they really are easy. You just have to make them work into your day. I just finished the second week of the intermediate half plan. It has 5 runs a week, a stretch. But if you run your easy runs easy, it is so doable. Another easy run today, and it felt so good. Running felt fun, and I don't have that tired feeling like I do when I worry about pace instead of heart rate. 23 miles running and 28 miles biking this week.
Great job, Rebecca.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a good, obvious point to stop here and say, if you haven't looked at all of our other training plans, what are you doing? We've said that, I mean, you and I have kicked around the idea that if you're a runner out there and you've ran your whole life, and let's say you want to qualify for Boston, we have a plan for you.
We do.
Our largest demographic is brand new runners, but we have plans for everybody.
That's right.
So go check it out. The new app is incredible.
That's right.
It's out. The church model is out. You'll be seeing a lot more of that here coming up. But to Rebecca's point, she's on the intermediate plan, and all of our plans are absolutely doable.
That's right. Yep. When she mentions that, you know, the more advanced you get, mm-hmm. well, the more running you have to do.
Sure.
That's obvious, right? Because the faster you want to be, the more running you have to do to get faster. Now, if you're out there and all you want to do is, I want to get fit. I just want to get fit. I just want to feel better. I want to sleep better. I want to walk upstairs easier. Then you can run 3 to 4 days a week, and you can do that great. If you want to get faster, if you want to maximize your performance, you're going to have to run more than that. If you want to get the most out of yourself.
And if you want to walk, we've got a plan for that.
That's exactly.
And if you want to ruck, I'm working on that one. I want to see a rucking plan in there. Because I'm kind of... like I was the guinea pig for the walkers, right? Yeah. 2 years ago, I thought you and I talked and said, wonder if our training will work for walkers. Well, it does. It did. And it's working for a lot of people right now. And so I'm kind of the guinea pig for rucking right now. I'm trying all different kinds of things. And so I don't know. I won't go any further than that right now, but stay tuned.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing a little bit of rucking myself.
Yeah.
And it's a different thing.
Different feel.
It's not like walking and it's not like running. It's something entirely different.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like walking. It feels like walking a lot, mm-hmm. but it taxes your system so much more than just walking.
So if you'll remember, I think you weren't rucking at the time. I made the comment on your body, it's more like swimming than it is like running. By that, I mean, you could ruck every day.
Mm-hmm.
And because you get done and you feel tired, but you don't feel sore. And the next day, you're not, you know, with running, if you do a hard workout, there's a lot of things going on and you got to do a lot of healing. Well, rucking, I don't feel that's the case. Now, I'm not looking at it from a scientific level. I'm just looking at it from how I feel the next day. Like yesterday, I did a really hard ruck in downtown Chattanooga. I think it was the road. You know, I've never ran the race. What's the race in downtown Chattanooga? It's basically uphill.
I don't know. You talking about the Memorial Day race, the Chattanooga Chase?
Maybe
it's got the big hill in it. It's not an uphill race, but it's got a big hill in it.
Right. Does it go past where Fast Break is now? Kind of up that hill?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't.
Well, I was downtown Chattanooga yesterday and I had a little bit of time, an hour and a half or so, and I wanted to get a ruck in. Well, I didn't want to go. The bridge is closed. The walking bridge is closed. I didn't want to go around to the South Shore. So I thought, well, I'll just go up Main Street here, whatever, that Market Street.
Market Street, yeah.
And I went past, I guess I've never been past where Fast Break is.
Oh, it goes.
That turns into a mountain right there.
It goes up for a while. Yeah, it does.
So it hit me like a baseball bat when I got there. But the point is, I did that yesterday. My heart rate, I don't know what it was. I need to look. It was probably 150.
Oh, wow.
By the time I got to the top of that hill and come back down, which I was spent when I got done. But this morning, I felt fine.
Yeah.
If I would have had that same type of effort on a run, I don't think I would have felt near as good this morning as I did after rucking.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I think rucking is in between swimming and weightlifting. Because
yeah, it's somewhere in there.
Yeah, because I feel like my muscles, I can feel the weakness in my muscles from having taxed them. They just don't feel...
They're not trashed.
They're not trashed. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You don't feel like, oh, I've really got to take it easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm being the guinea pig right now. So stay tuned. Hopefully we'll have more to come on that here soon.
Well, I'm back to this post. She's talking about how you have more easy runs. When you run more days in a week, you have mm-hmm. more easy runs. And that makes, it actually makes running more enjoyable when you have more easy runs to me.
Sure.
I mean, I enjoy the taxing myself and working hard. But think about that. If you run, if you're used to running 3 days a week and you move up to running 5 days a week, those extra 2 days are mostly going to be easy runs.
Mm-hmm.
And easy runs feel good. And from a fitness standpoint, they're super, super important
in
getting you fitter.
Sure.
So keep that in mind. Our run of the week comes from Brad Reeder. He lives up in Rome, Georgia. And he says this, this was from Strava. He says, there's a reason I don't run very much after work, paying the price for the peach cobbler. And then he makes a comment about somebody not being there that should have been there. But Brad is a very faithful Strava guy. And every day, almost every day, he runs. I know he got to run at least 6 days a week, most weeks. It just feels that way anyway. And he's always one of the leaders in our Strava group. As a matter of fact, he's leading our group right now for the week.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. Because he usually runs before the sun comes up in the morning.
Yeah.
And when he does that, obviously, he's got a head start on everybody else for that day.
Yeah.
So anyway, Brad, congratulations to Brad. Brad is just, again, he's a super nice guy. But I just wanted to give a shout out to a guy that is faithful to the Strava group and encouraging, always positive and uplifting.
Well, I got tickled about the peach cobbler because if you'll remember, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, you and I would do this podcast. And then after the podcast, we would go eat at a Mexican restaurant
yeah.
right down the road.
Yeah.
And then like three hours later, we would meet for the triathlon's team's run practice.
Yeah.
And I would get there early and run. And it's like, I knew why I felt like garbage. It's because of the Mexican we had eat 3 hours before. And so there's two lessons to learn here. One is understanding the problem. Because some people, they'll eat that cobbler or they'll eat Mexican and they'll think, why is my running so bad? So they never connect. So the first thing is understanding the problem. It could be cobbler. You know, for sleep, it could be caffeine after lunch. For weight, it could be eating too much. So that's step number one, is understanding the problem. But then the second thing is, the obvious next step is making the change.
Yeah.
And that's where we often, we just keep stating the problem.
Yeah.
You know.
That's true.
What is it? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. We're all insane so many times. So the reason you want something tomorrow must be greater than the task right in front of you.
Yeah.
And so we stopped eating at the Mexican restaurant, and all of a sudden, my Thursday runs miraculously became better.
It's crazy.
It is. And, I mean, we were just talking before the podcast about sleep and doing simple little things before you go to bed or in the hours leading up to going to bed. But it's, you know, that 9 o'clock Oreo cookie starts screaming at you or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So. I don't know, you know, understand what the problem is, but
do something.
Really dig in and do something to change.
Absolutely. Well, just for trivia's sake here, he runs on the Berry College campus a lot. I don't know if he works at Berry or what it is, but Berry College, if you don't know this, in Rome, Georgia, is the largest college campus in the world. It is 27,000 acres. They have a lot of races there. They have some road races. They have cross-country races there. They have track races there. They have a beautiful new stadium there. And Berry College, largest campus in the world. If that ever comes up on a trivia, you got that one right now. Talk about trivia. Our trivia question from last week was, who is credited with popularizing interval training as a system? This is an interesting question. There's not an actual absolutely it was this person. Sure. It kind of evolved over time. So I'll take a few different answers on this one, but I just wanted to talk about how this has all kind of come into being. So there was a guy named Joe Binks. He was a 416 miler back in 1902 when people didn't know what they were doing. This is what they say. They say he trained only one time per week, 30 minutes. And during this 30 minutes, he would run 5 or 6 110-yard intervals at top speed and then finish with a fast 200 to 300 yards. And that's what he did for training. Mm-hmm. And he was a 416 miler. Talk about natural ability. Mm-hmm. And then around 1910, the Finns devised a systematic approach to interval training. There was a coach named Lauri Pikala, and she coached Paavo Nurmi and Hans Kolmanen. I never can remember how to say his last name, but he was a 1912 Olympic gold medalist in the 5K, 10K, and cross country. But unfortunately, we don't know a ton about their training, but we do know that they use some type of a systematic way of doing that. And then Gösta Holmér, a Swedish coach in the 1930s, came up with fartlek training, what we know as fartlek training today, which is a type of interval training, or can be. And of course, she coached Gunder Hag and Arne Andersen, who were extremely close to breaking four in the pre-World War II era, at a time when they didn't know if they could do that. But during this same period, there was a coach named Waldemar Gerschler, and he came up with interval training that is based on heart rates. And in many ways, the Gerschler training changed the way we look at interval training. It says this: he measured heart rate and its reaction to a training stimulus over 3,000 people and decided that what they found represented the average person. The idea of his training was that you stress the heart until 180 beats per minute. After this, you allow 1 minute and 30 seconds to get back down to 120 to 125 beats per minute. If you take longer than this to recover, that means you went too fast or too long on your repeat. If it takes shorter than 130 to recover, then the athlete should begin again once his heart rate hits that point. Gerstler's training was done of mostly short repetitions. And then, of course, he started to work with Emil Zatopek, or he didn't work with, but Emil Zatopek took his
philosophy
and started working with it. And of course, Emil Zatopek, maybe the greatest runner of all time, his training was a rather simple concept: break the runs into shorter bursts that he could run at an average or fast at an average faster speed. And this is what he said. He said, "When I was young, I was too slow. I thought I must learn to run fast by practicing to run fast. So I ran 100 meters fast 20 times. Then I came back slow, slow, slow. People said, 'Emil, you're crazy. You're training like a sprinter. And why should I practice running slow? I already know how to run slow. I want to learn to run fast.' Everyone said, 'Emil, you are a fool.' But when I first won the European Championship, they said, 'Emil, you're a genius.' If I run 100 meters 20 times, that is 2 kilometers, and that is no longer a sprint." So that was his reasoning for what he did. And of course, Emil Zatopek was, he was the guy that won the 5K, 10K, and marathon in 1952 in the Olympics. Maybe one of the greatest achievements ever in running. So this is where interval training comes from. If you don't know, the word interval really applies to the time in between the hard runs. So when you do 10 times 400 meters on the track, the interval is the space between.
It's the rest interval.
Yeah. Yes, but we don't look at it. We don't term it that way when we talk about it, do we?
Yeah, and this is, we talked about this a few weeks ago, and this is precisely where I feel like AI is going to be a game changer going forward. Because just like back in those days, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, they were kind of figuring this out not scientifically.
Yeah.
I mean, they were basically, it was trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
And today, I feel like we're kind of in that weird place where we're still using the principles that were formulated non-scientifically. We're kind of backfilling science into that to confirm that what he has done better. But what I think AI is going to do is it's going to pull the veil off of something we haven't even thought about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fartlek training, you know, that's kind of been a staple in running for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there's going to be some things, and we were just talking about AI before the podcast started. There's going to be things that we haven't connected the dots. I think the science is already out there.
Yeah.
But AI is going to be able to compile it. It's going to be able to look at billions of data points where we're only looking at certain data points. AI is going to be able to look at billions of them, and it's going to be able to say, "Hey, you need to run 5 long runs in a week," or you need to run a long run every month. It's going to be, I feel like there's going to be something crazy that we haven't thought about. It's going to be a game changer in really all fitness, because really all fitness is, it's about doing hard things and then getting recovered before you do it again, right?
Yep, that's right.
And I think it's going to figure out how to do that more efficiently, because it really comes down to a math problem.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's where AI
and patterns
rises above everything, is finding patterns and doing math.
That's right, yeah. You know, the interesting thing about this to me is I think there's a lot of people who think heart rate training is a new thing.
Yeah.
And this guy's doing it way back in.
It's fairly new on your watch, but people have been touching their neck for hundreds of years.
I did it in high school in the 80s. We did some hard. I still do some of those same workouts you remember with the kids.
Yeah.
We would do workouts where we would do intervals.
Watch your watch.
That's right.
Hold your neck.
And we would count. We'd help them count their number of beats, and we would send them off. When their heart rate got back down to 120, we'd send them off.
And I mean, think about it. RPE, ready to proceed to exertion, that is heart rate training.
Yeah.
It's just how hard are you breathing, which is a determining factor of what your heart rate is.
That is true.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back, and there was a Wall Street Journal article about super shoes. I mean, when you start making the Wall Street Journal, it's it's a big deal. And this, you know how I go to Perplexity, and I ask Perplexity, can you summarize this article for me? And so Perplexity did that for me. Yeah. It was nice of her. These are the key points. Performance Revolution, the new breed of running shoes with soles sometimes exceeding 40 millimeters in thickness, have transformed distance running. So 40 millimeters is the limit to how thick shoes are allowed to be for competition. And so there are some shoes that exceed that. Regulatory response. In response to these advancements, the sport's governing body, set a maximum stack height of 40 millimeters. And then there's these brands that are pushing the limits. So like Adidas actually makes a shoe, and there's other companies that do it too, that makes a shoe that's over 40 millimeters. Now, you can wear that shoe. You can run in that shoe if you want to, and it's perfectly acceptable, except you can't get in international competition and wear that shoe. Then it's illegal. So they're making these shoes. This Adidas shoe is $300. They're selling out of it because people want that shoe. And then, of course, consumer demand and safety. The appeal of these shoes lies in their comfort and the ability to help runners go longer distances with less fatigue. However, brands acknowledge there's a practical limit to how thick soles can get. So if you get over about 50 millimeters, the shoe becomes so unstable it's not good to run in. And so that's another consideration, because now it becomes an injury problem if you get too thick. So, and then, of course, this... it's had an impact on our culture. You'll notice a lot of people just walking around in very thick shoes these days. Mm-hmm. And part of that goes back to all of this super shoe stuff. So here's the question that I have. Is it cheating to wear shoes that are thicker than the 40 millimeters, like for training and, well, even in racing for us mere mortals that run in local road races? Is that cheating? I mean, for a pro, it would be considered that, but for us,
I'm gonna answer this, and then I want to ask some more questions.
Okay.
To me, no, it's not cheating. If it's legal, it's not cheating. But I think it comes down to so many things in our society today. This being one of them. This is just a great example. This is kind of just an example of what's going on in our society. I think it comes down to what's driving the decision. Why is it that somebody like me would go buy a pair of $300 shoes like this?
Chasing PRs.
Okay. So my initial thought was, if it creates less fatigue, then that's great, right?
Right.
You know, training, it creates less fatigue. But I can hop on a bike or in a car, and I can drive a long run, but that doesn't help me. So it's not the 15 or 18 mile long run that makes you a faster runner. It's what that run does to your body, what it does to your legs, your lungs, your mitochondria that makes you faster. It's the tearing down of your body that makes you a faster runner. And to me, the benefit of these shoes come on race day, where they have proven to give a competitive advantage. So my answer is no. If it's legal, then it's not cheating. I point to another great example is in the sport of triathlon. If you are a professional, the water temperature must be 68 degrees or lower to wear a wetsuit. But if you're an amateur, the water temperature can be as high as 78 degrees. Well, wetsuits obviously give you a competitive advantage.
Oh, absolutely.
Big time.
Yeah.
So for an amateur to wear a wetsuit which gives you a competitive advantage when the water's 77 degrees. It's not cheating. But unless it's needed, I mean, you can swim in water in 67 degrees. I mean, it's cold, but it's not unbearable.
Yeah.
So for most people, if the water's 78 degrees, they're not training in a wetsuit. They're going out and swimming and doing, they're conditioning their body to doing hard. They're not wearing a wetsuit. I feel like this is going to probably get me in a lot of trouble. I feel like wearing these shoes for normal day-to-day training is like wearing a wetsuit in normal day-to-day training. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, you got to, it's like you're not pushing yourself as hard. But here's the thing.
Right.
This is where maybe we probably diverge a little bit here, because what it enables you to do, it's sort of like, why do you do moto pacing on a bike? Moto pacing, if you don't know, is where you get
in the bicycle lungs and gives the legs a break.
Yeah. You get it on a bicycle behind a motorcycle, and the motorcycle goes faster than that cyclist could normally ride. Mm-hmm. But in the slipstream, you can ride a little bit faster. And the whole idea is...
But you only moto pace very sporadically.
Sure, sure. Yeah. But I don't think people are wearing these super shoes every day either.
Yeah.
They're using them for, like I do.
But a lot of people do. My workouts. I mean, that's their, most people don't have three or four different sets of shoes that they train in. Most people will buy. And so that's my question. If I'm the runner that you're training, would you advise me to do my training day in and day out in super shoes? I would not. I see nothing wrong with having those for race day. It's just like the same reason you wear racing flats on race day, but you don't train in those.
Yeah, but I don't know if I agree with you.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why, because you can still tax yourself just as much mm-hmm. in the super shoes.
Sure.
But you're just running faster while you're doing it.
Right.
So your effort level can still be the same. You're just right. traveling faster while you do it, and I don't see the difference in the two.
I think my point is, we need to be careful, and the super shoes is not a silver bullet.
That's correct.
And so people, I feel like some people will get a pair of shoes and say, "This is the secret sauce."
Yeah,
they're not. Your effort is the secret sauce. So if you're running a, let's say your training plan prescribes a, and this is going to be extremes, this is not true, but the extreme version of this would be, if your training plan calls you to run your intervals at a tempo run at 6 minute pace,
mm-hmm.
and your super shoes makes you be able to run at a 6 minute pace with a lesser effort, then you shouldn't do that. You right. should be running faster, because it's all about, you've got to tax your body. You've got to tear down your body so that it can grow back stronger.
It's true.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So, it makes perfect sense.
I don't know. That's where I think it comes down to what's driving your decision.
And how you use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Because if you're not taxing the body,
right.
you do have to do that.
Because the extreme version is, like I said from the outset, I can go cover an 18-mile long run on my bicycle.
Yeah. But it's not going to help you running very much.
It's not going to
yeah.
benefit me
yeah.
because I'm not taxing my body like I should.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm saying is don't use these things. And there's more things than just the shoes. Don't use these things as a hack. There yeah. are no hacks
That's
for getting fitter and faster.
Got to work.
There are no hacks.
That's right. Yep. Well, Roscoe Parker has shared two chapters of his story. He did that back in episodes 144 and 158, if you'd like to go back and check those out. But he has another story called Another Chapter. Mm-hmm. That's a good title. Mm-hmm. This is another chapter in my story about how God has used running to change my life and grow me as a Christian. It's been a while since my last two stories, so for anyone who doesn't remember, I spoke of how God used different situations that I faced in my running journey to bring me closer to Him. Whether it was working through injuries or as a cocky 20-year-old running my first 5K,
God has always been faithful and has always had an important lesson to teach me through it all. This story I'm about to tell, though, is about God teaching me the most important lesson of all. He is what it's all about, and not me. If you remember from one of my previous stories, I had hurt my back in a car wreck when I was 26 in 2016. I was still running 5K races, which is my preferred distance, but I was running a lot slower and dealing with considerable pain. Fast forward to when I was 35 years old and I was sitting in the bulldozer on a landfill where I work one day. My back was killing me and I couldn't hardly stand up straight, much less go running. Unfortunately, this was a regular thing for me during that time. I had good days and bad days, and I had put on a good bit of weight due to eating poorly and not getting the right amount of exercise. This particular day, I was sitting on the bulldozer and I started to feel sorry for myself. I started praying, "Lord, why did I have to get injured like that? I could have been faster and ran a lot better and been in better shape and done so much more if I hadn't hurt my back. Why, Lord?" I felt hopeless and beat down, like a failure, not only because I was running slow, but because I hadn't taken better care of myself and my family. Then God got a hold of me. He started bringing a lot of things back to my realization. He reminded me of the races I had run during this time where I didn't necessarily run fast or well, but I was able to encourage others who were struggling to keep going. He reminded me of several people that I came across, including young runners, who were running in their first race and didn't know if they could make it. I was able to run with them and let them know they could make it. I would give them pointers and advice on how to breathe or to hold their arms to help them go a little further. Sometimes it was as simple as saying to a younger runner, "Hey, you're not going to let a 30-something-year-old man beat you, are you?" Sometimes that was all the motivation they needed to finish. I'm not saying that 30-something is old by any means, but to a young teenager, I was ancient. Then God reminded me about the Run for God class I coached at our church in 2018 and how wonderful it was to see people who had never run before finish their first 5K race and grow in their Christian walk. God showed me all of this and told me if I had things my way and ran fast and excelled the way I thought I should, then I would have made it all about me and not about what God has put me here for, and that's to encourage and lift people up, just like many people have done for me over the years. This really opened my spiritual eyes and helped me realize that it's not about me. It's all about God and doing His work. Then God gave me an example. Jesus Christ, the Son of the Most High God, the Creator of the universe, chose to come down to earth from heaven and be amongst us and suffer things that no one can even begin to imagine so that we can have a home in heaven one day. He didn't have to do it, but He did it for us. Can't God take our situations like mine that I couldn't help and didn't choose and use it for His glory? Of course He can, and He did. If it wasn't for the injury I suffered, I wouldn't have slowed down to the point where I could help and encourage others the same way others encouraged me. This lit a fire under me, and I knew that God wasn't done with me yet. I knew I needed to start taking steps to get back to where God wanted me to be. My chiropractor told me about yoga to help repair my back, and I started doing that, and it has helped me immensely. Thank God for yoga. Later on, I had a cyst from forming my throat that caused my doctor to put me on a strict diet. Thank God the cyst is gone now, and it was nothing, but it worked out for the best, and I lost weight and now have better eating habits and feel much better and healthier. I've been running more and without pain, and things have really been better with my fitness journey. But most of all, God reminded me that He still has more ahead of me, and I have a lot more miles to run. I have been training my son now, who is 7 years old. He wants to be a runner, and he can already run 5K races. He's gotten faster than me, but I keep telling him that I'm going to catch up to him. I'm so proud of him, and I can't wait to see what God does with him. I marvel at the goodness and faithfulness of God. His mercy and grace are greater than anything else we could ever receive in this world. Just when we think we're done and have nothing left, God shows up to remind us that as long as we trust Him, He will always see us through. I'm 37 now and in better shape than I have been in years physically, but most of all, I'm in much better shape spiritually, as God has given me a new perspective on my running journey and has shown me that I'm just getting started when it comes to doing His work. I love y'all. God bless y'all, And thank y'all for continuing to be part of my running journey.
Roscoe's a Southerner, isn't he?
You can tell, right?
Got the y'alls in there. I love it. You know, I love the concept he lays out here of seasons of our running journey.
Yeah.
You know, we get this in life. I mean, we talk about how I'm in one season of my life where no kids, with kids, empty nester. You know, we have these seasons of our life, but we often don't apply that to our fitness life. And we do things like, if I can't be as fast as I was, or I can't get to the gym as many days as I used to, or I need to walk and not just run, then I need to hang up my shoes.
Mm.
Why do we do that, Dean? Why? We think it's a binary in fitness. If we can't do this, then we just need to quit. And yeah. People do that all the time. It's why gyms are full January 1 and they're empty by Valentine's Day.
True.
Or when
why
things
do you think that is?
As soon as things don't go right, then it's like, oh, well, obviously, this isn't what I should be doing.
I mean, we hear it in this ministry all the time. I missed a workout. I messed up.
Yeah.
Why do we do that?
I think it's because we like to achieve things.
Mm-hmm.
And when we feel like we can no longer achieve things, then we, you know, I look at myself. I can't run as fast as I once could. But you know what I still look forward to? I still look forward to competing with the people my age.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to beat them. Sure. I love being able to feel like in some way I'm improving. And as soon as we go backwards or feel like we're going backwards, then we get discouraged. Mm-hmm. And to your point, we shouldn't. We should be looking for what is it
God got us for?
Yes,
right here.
That's exactly right. And that's. Yeah. But unfortunately, we've got to quit being resentful for the things that we don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And be thankful for the things we do have.
Right.
So for me, as an example, I'm thankful to God that I can run fast.
Sure.
I'm overflowing with thankfulness about that. You know what I wish he would do? Mm-hmm. I wish he would make my memory better.
Yeah, me too.
But he doesn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't. Now, I can take people like Charlie Bridges, who can remember every name of everybody he's ever met from years ago, and he recalls all of those names. I'm so impressed with that. God gave him that.
Sure.
He didn't give me that. He gave me something different. And I should be thankful for what he gave me, and I shouldn't. I've worked hard on the whole memory thing. It's just something I don't have,
mm-hmm.
and it's fine. It's just like there are people who are never going to run as fast as I can run, but they still run.
Sure.
I still want to talk to people and try to remember names. But don't we dwell on and we think, well, I deserve a better memory. No, I don't.
Yeah.
No,
you
I don't
deserve anything.
I don't deserve anything. I don't deserve anything. But indeed, I also count all things loss for the excellence of the knowledge of Christ Jesus, my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and I count them as rubbish that I may gain Christ. That's Philippians 3:8. He goes on to say, I was falling into a place of why is this happening to me and thinking that I was losing something. Then God showed me that what I thought I was losing was actually gaining something much greater by doing his will and not my own.
You know, this is basically Paul saying, change your perspective.
Yeah.
It's the situation's going to stay the same, but we need to change our perspective. This is the proverbial, you can't see the forest for the trees. Paul's saying, get above the trees. You know, just like you were talking about, you can't compete nowadays in a professional running race.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go to a race and race the guys your age and be happy with that and mm-hmm. excel at that and find what God is wanting for you in that. But if you just stayed with your head down and say, God, I can't go to the Peachtree Road Race and be in the top 0.5% anymore. I don't, maybe a bad example, but you see what I'm saying? If we say, I can't do that anymore, and we stay there, we're going to be miserable.
Yes, we are.
We're going to be miserable. And we're not going to allow God to work through us when if we just say, okay, God, I can't keep up with that 1% anymore, but I can duke it out with these guys my age. And I can use that platform to share Christ and to do things on Christ's behalf. But you've got to get above the trees to see that.
Yeah.
Because we're stuck in our environment of, I want to compete in the open races. And if that goes away and we stay in that environment, it's just a recipe for disaster. And we've got to get above the trees and see God's pointing at something else. God is lighting another street light. We talk about street lights all the time, but so many times we don't see that next street light because we're trying to figure out why this one went out.
Yep.
And God lights street lights and he puts out street lights.
Yep.
And we need to look, find where God's working and go there. It's what David Hendricks used mm-hmm. to always say, find where God is working and go there.
Yep. Such a good point.
But the Helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, he will teach you all things and bring to your remembrance all things that I said to you. That's John 14:26. He says, it's amazing to me how in our lowest moments, the Holy Spirit will bring things back to mind about what God has already done in your life to remind you that he is still faithful to get you through whatever you are going through now. He certainly did so for me. My thing about this is it's if we'll hear him, mm-hmm. if we will pay attention, back to your point, we're too busy with our head down. Mm-hmm. And I've mentioned before on here a bunch of times about how when I was young, I was really focused on the competition side of things. Mm-hmm. I didn't pay any attention to the people who were at the back of the pack.
Sure.
I didn't know any of those back of the pack sure. people. I just knew the people at the front, and that's where my focus was. And I'm so thankful that God has brought to my mind those people who are at the back of the pack. Because you know what? Some of the stories back there mm-hmm. are way better than the stories at the front.
Sure.
And so I'm thankful for that. But the problem is, I went for years and never saw that.
Yeah.
And then, boom, all of a sudden, I see it. And my life is richer because of it. But I had to see it first.
You know, there's a great theologian who once sang a song. The theologian's name is Vanilla Ice. And he sang a song that says, stop, collaborate, and listen. I'm not going to go through the rest of that, but I could right now if you want me yeah. to. But the point is, we've got a Bible study that I go to them early on Tuesday mornings. And the question this past week was, what holds you back from experiencing Christ in your devotion time? Now, that's a strange question. What stops you from experiencing Christ during your devotion time? Sounds counterintuitive, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the whole point of devotion, right? Is right. to experience God. But it's my lack of discipline to stop and just listen. Mm-hmm. That is just as important. I can go through this book. I can go through this Bible. But if all I'm doing is reading and saying, God, I need this. I need you to do this. I don't understand this. And I never stop and just get quiet and do nothing and listen, I'm missing 50% of the devotion time.
Yeah.
It's back to Vanilla Ice. It's not stop and listen, it's collaborate.
Yep.
It's to collaborate, you got to have both sides. Mm-hmm. If I just talk to you the whole time, we're not collaborating, right?
Correct.
I've got to allow that input to come into my life. And with our devotion time, the other part of that input is God. And so many times we're just talking and talking and talking and reading and saying, God, what about this? I don't stop
mm-hmm.
and listen.
That's good stuff. That is so true. But the problem is I'm busy doing the Dean thing.
Right.
I'm worried about the Dean thing rather than the God thing.
Yeah.
And that's where we've got to, you got to stop and go, wait a minute, what are you trying to tell me?
Yeah. It's like, I think you brought this up here a while back, but the picture of Jesus talking to the little girl, and she has her teddy bear. And
yeah.
He's got this huge teddy bear hiding behind his back, and he's basically saying, let me have your teddy bear. And she's, you can tell by the picture, she's saying, but God, this is my teddy bear. I need this teddy bear. But all these things, she's not hearing what he's saying. I have something better for you.
Yeah.
But so many times, we never stop to hear him say that.
That's right. Yeah. Galatians 6:2-3. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. He says, "The Lord made it clear to me that I'm not running for my benefit alone, but to bring Him glory by lifting others up and letting them know that the same God I serve has brought me through my trials and continues to do so, will do the same for them. Praise God for His goodness and faithfulness." The thing I love most about what he says here, he says, "The Lord made it clear to me that I am not running for my benefit alone." What he is saying, we're usually either or. Mm. We're either worried about what other people are doing, or we're worried about what we're doing. He's saying it's not either or, it's and also. Mm-hmm. It's you can do both. I can be focused on my running. I can be very focused on getting in my miles and my workouts and trying to beat people in my races. But I can also think about all of those folks behind me, and I can try to be an encouragement. And every time I see somebody over at the track who you can tell they're out there and they're struggling, and you know they're out there just they're trying something new, maybe. Mm-hmm. Every time I see that, I stop and I say, "Hey, you know, there's a lot of people." I just did it on the track in Cahuta this past week. I was talking to a guy, and he was talking about how I was running so fast. I said, "Listen." I said, "You're beating a whole lot of people who are sitting on the couch right now, mm-hmm. but you're out here walking."
Yeah, just that kind word.
Yep.
I usually nowadays I'm walking or rucking, and I'll be on a trail or something, and you can tell a lady will come by, and she's brand new in this running journey. You can tell. You can spot them. And you just say, "Hey, you're doing awesome."
Mm-hmm.
Man, their face lights up. It changes their day, and those are the moments that we've got to be where God wants us to be for those interactions to happen.
That's right.
But if my head was down and it was all about Mitchell right then, I would have ran right by that, blown right by that opportunity.
Yeah.
But those opportunities are all around us. But if we're moping because God don't have me exactly where I want Him to be, just know God's got you exactly where He wants you to be. It's not about us.
That's right.
To His point here.
And it is okay. If I'm doing a track workout mm-hmm. and there's somebody there at the track, while I'm doing those hard runs, mm-hmm. I don't talk to anybody.
Right.
I'm focused on what I'm doing.
Sure.
But as soon as I get that hard part done mm-hmm. and I get a chance, then I'm going to say something to that other person. And it's okay to do both.
Sure.
So, question, how many times do we let our problems, challenges, injuries, etc. define us and bring us down into a pit of darkness and depression when we should be seeking God and looking for what He is doing through our situations and what He is trying to show us and teach us?
I love this question, and it's one that we should all ponder and apply to, again, so many areas of our lives. That's what I love about this podcast, this ministry, is we talk about running things, and it applies to every area of our life, and this is no different. I mean, Dean, if running, walking, rucking, being a husband, a father, an employee, a deacon at your church, those are all what you do. Those are not who you are. And when things you do are threatened, it can cause temporary sadness. But when who you are is taken away, it's devastating. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what he's talking about here. I'm a child of God, period. Now, I have to remind myself of this often, so don't think I'm coming to you from a high stool somewhere. But I'm a child of God, and my goal is to shine His light in all that I do. Be it rucking in the streets of Chattanooga yesterday, or sitting here with you today discussing this topic on a podcast. If you get that backwards, you're in for despair. You're exactly what he asked in this question. Understand that your job, your fitness, your family, these are all things that you do. They're not who you are. And if somebody comes up and says, "Tell me about yourself," our first thing out of our mouth should be, again, don't think I'm sitting up here saying, because I struggle with this too, it should not be, "Oh, I'm a runner.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Not first.
It's what you do.
Yeah.
It's what you do. It's not who you are.
I like that. I like that. And here's the other thing too. Understand that when you do try to ask God about things and you try to get some insight from God, God doesn't always give you the answer right away. And I think that's important for us to understand, because right now there's something in my life right now that is, it's concerning me. Mm-hmm. I've asked God for direction. He hasn't given it to me. Mm-hmm. He's going to, but I need to be patient and wait for him to give me that direction. And, I can't get frustrated, and I can't just go out and do my own thing. I'll continue doing what I'm doing now. Just mm-hmm. like I'm standing I'm waiting for the next streetlight to come on, and it will.
Yeah.
And then I'll head in that direction. Sure. But until then, just be patient.
Yeah.
Another question. When is a time that we have been going through, when is a time that we have been going through a trial in our lives and questioned or doubted God regarding our circumstances, only to find out that on the other side of it, God has a plan and a purpose much greater and more wonderful than anything we can think or imagine? This story is just one example of a time like that in my life. I've talked about losing a job at one time. You can't help but question God. You know, I've been in the same place for 25 years, and all of a sudden things, you know, they weren't good, and they spiraled for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first time when you've been working and you've never not worked, mm-hmm. and you're home one day, you know, at first it's like, I can do whatever I want to.
You know, it gets old pretty quick.
And it's not so bad, but after a few days of that, it gets really old really fast. And then you start thinking about it. And then you start thinking, well, I wasn't treated fairly, or this didn't go the way it should have gone. And you start to feel sorry for yourself. And it just spirals downhill from there. But it wasn't until I quit feeling sorry for myself that things, all of a sudden, everything turned bright just as quickly as it could. We've got to quit playing victim all the time. We got to quit the woe is me. And it's okay to get there every once in a while. We're going to get there. We're going to be disappointed. We're going to be in situations that are not good situations. But then we got to move on.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked before years ago about a lady who I know who her mother died. It was the last time I talked to her, it had been 10 or 15 years since her mother died. She still can't get over it. Mm. I'm not saying that's an easy thing to get over. It's not. I lost my mother 6 years ago, and I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to get over it, and we got to move on and quit doing the woe is me thing. And then God will give us some direction, and it'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, you hear the cliche, beauty from ashes. I mean, it's the whole idea that sometimes you got to burn things to the ground to build something new. And that's often what God will do in our lives. But we never look at the new growth. We stay. I think back to the 2008 housing crisis.
Mm.
For a builder, which I was, in the moment, my life was over.
Yeah.
My life was, and everything around me was crumbling to the ground. But I look back now, Run for God would have never started, which is now Upward Running. It would have never started had it not been for 2008 COVID. You remember this well.
Yep.
We sat around a table thinking, this is it. This ministry, a ministry that relies on big groups and churches, COVID was the bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Then along came Run Club. Then along came this podcast. Then came along all these new things that God is using through this ministry. But it's only sitting here looking back that we can say, yeah, there was beauty came out of those ashes. But when you're in the moment, that's why I've said over and over on this podcast that you got to look back. When you're in the middle of the fire right now, look back to the last fire.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have done that during COVID, which I'm going to be honest and say I didn't, I'm thinking, oh God, what are you doing here? If I would have just looked back, you know, 12 years prior, I would have said, oh, Okay, you're going to do something here.
Yeah.
But our memory is so short sometimes.
Okay.
But I just sent a text to a guy night before last, going through some pretty heavy stuff right now. And I said, strength is built through trials.
Mm.
Remember that, because he's consumed with it right now. He thinks his life is over, but it's not. Yeah. And it's easy to say sitting here on this podcast, hard to implement, but the more you do it, the better you get.
Absolutely. Yeah. Last question. How has God let you know he's not done with you yet when you have felt like you are done? That's a tough question.
Yeah.
Because I know how you and I are wired a little bit the same here. We never feel like we're done. It's always look to the next thing.
Sure.
And start working on the next thing. And I'm a firm believer that I've got a lot of years left to work for the Lord.
Yeah.
And I don't want to quit that. Now, here's the cool thing to me. This is the coolest thing is I'm getting to where I can't do things I used to be able to do. Mm-hmm. I'll be 60 this year, and there are just things I can't do or that I would be scared to do that I used to do. But am I running? I'm getting slower. I'm getting weaker. All of those things are deteriorating as I get older. But the one thing that continues to get better is my relationship with Christ, with the Lord. And it would be a shame. Think about this. Those other things, sure, they're fading away. But the one thing that's getting stronger, it would be a shame for me to abandon that thing that keeps getting better. So I should embrace that wholeheartedly, because that's the one thing that always gets better with time, no matter what.
Yeah. Many times as your ability decreases, your wisdom increases. You know, I'm like you. I've never felt completely done. I've never struggled with that. I've struggled with plenty of other things. But I felt done where I am. And I'm searching for that next street light. You know, it's like I said, we could so easily relate to this in our life, but we just don't prescribe it. But I thought about, you know, the other theologian I thought about this morning was Lauren Daigle. You know, she says, look up, child. You know, so many times when things aren't going right, we got to look up and look around and see, oh, God's over there working. I need to go there now. But so many times we have this thing and we're holding on to it so tight, and we're praying at God, God, come work right here. Work right here. And that's not how this works. We find where God's working and we go there. God is working in Upward Running. But the moment that God is not working in Upward Running, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Period.
Yep.
I don't think that's going to be the case in my lifetime. At least I hope that's not the case. I can't say for 100%, but today God's working here.
Amen.
And so my feet are right here, and I'm going to keep watching God do what he does
and
be part of it.
It can be terribly hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually too. For pennies a day, Upward Running can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join Upward Running today and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to upwardrunning.com and sign up today.
All right, we're back. And last week, you were listening to the Unashamed podcast. Mm-hmm. That's the Duck Dynasty guys. And you ran across a conversation that's really interesting to all the things that we've talked about here. And so in this clip, we're going to share, Chad, I think that's his name, is talking about, where'd the other half of Al go?
Yeah.
You know, because
so Al is one of the Duck Dynasty guys.
Right. And he's a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And he has lost a bunch of weight.
Right.
And he shows a picture in there to show how much weight he's lost. And it's tremendous. And he's congratulating him. And he's talking about it all the discipline that it takes and all of that. And then Chad goes into this on the clip. So let's share this.
And it's amazing too, man, when you consider how much our physical body and our mind, we call it our soul, our mind, will, and emotions, and our spirit, they're all so interconnected in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't do the best job as the church in terms of holding each other accountable to our physical health, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when we can improve our physical health by discipline, by doing the things we know we should do, it does have a major positive impact on what we are able to accomplish as an ambassador for Christ out in the world.
Yeah.
Not only the image that we portray in this physical world, but we just feel better. We have more energy. We have more drive. I think our mind is clear when we read the word, when we read scripture, when we pray, our mind is clear to you know, receive what the Lord has for us in his word.
Yeah.
It's just all connected. And I would challenge every follower of Christ who's listening to this show, if you need to lose a little weight, get out and move your body. Put in the work, and it's going to make a positive impact in the kingdom. It's definitely not everything, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying we should get to the point where we are worshiping our bodies and idolizing our physical fitness and our health, but it will make a tremendous impact, I believe.
Yeah, the reason I sent that to you, Dean, is number one, to his point, it's something we just don't talk about a lot. But 2 Corinthians 5:20 is where he was talking about we are ambassadors for Christ. Well, what is an ambassador? I mean, let's look at UN ambassadors or ambassador to China. It's a person who goes and represents something.
Mm.
And we're to go out into this world and we are to represent Christ in all areas of our life. But our problem is many times is, and we want to go represent Christ here, let's don't talk about this thing. I mean, think about if the U.S. ambassador to the UN goes to the UN and he says, yeah, here's what the United States is all about, but we're not going to talk about this little dirty secret here. He wouldn't be an effective UN ambassador, right?
Right.
Everybody would discount everything he says because of this one thing. Well, we are to be good stewards of our time, of our talent, and of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that's kind of taboo in the church nowadays. There's a few of these subjects, fitness being one of them, that, you know, if God calls you to do something, we're supposed to be ready when God calls us. Well, if God calls you to the mission field in Africa, and you're 100 pounds overweight, that's a problem. You're not going to be able to do that effectively. And I'm not the purpose of this post or this clip was not to shame anybody.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that people have confronted me about things that was like, ouch, you know, I can either look at that as you're attacking me, or I can look at that as you're lovingly encouraging me to be the best ambassador for Christ as I can be. And that's all I'm trying to do with this clip is say, we need to think more about this and we need to encourage those around us. That's why I'm so passionate in the times when I've taught classes in my church before the 5K challenge, and I will go to people who need it, and because I know the difference it can make in their life.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think Chad just makes so many good points here that we're to always be ready to go where Christ calls us and to be an ambassador at all times. And that's in every single area of our life.
That's right. And I think there's one thing that you said that we have to be ready. What if God calls us to be a missionary? But then there's people, I think we rationalize things in our mind by saying, well, God's not going to call me to do these tough physical things. And so it's not that important for me. Now, for somebody else, it might be. But for me, it's not important for me. Mm-hmm. But that's not true. All of us can do more if we are better physically, mm-hmm. period.
Sure.
they goes on in this same podcast, the guy goes on to talk about how he went, he was hunting one day and he realized what bad shape he was in when he went to chase something. And he made up his mind, I've got to be in better shape for that. That just came up. Now, this is hunting. It's not something that we're talking about from a spiritual standpoint, but there are spiritual things too that can sure. come up that just come out of the blue where we need to be in better shape for that thing. We all should be in better shape just so we can do things that need to be done. And I think what happens is, because when's the last time you heard a sermon where a pastor said that?
Mm-hmm. It's taboo.
I don't. Yeah. I mean, it's like other subjects that are taboo for different reasons, maybe the same.
Yeah.
It's pastors. Maybe I don't want to call pastors out. No. That's not what I'm doing here. But pastors are like, well, I'm not in good shape. I can't go telling everybody else they need to be in good shape. Right. You know,
and that's why the church model of what we do, the Upward Running, the 5K challenge is so appealing to me, because it is a tool that you can go into the church and you can say, here's something to help us. Don't say you, help us get in better physical shape so that we can do the things for Christ. And you can go to the people who you know need it and say, hey, look, here's something I think you should do. It's not in a judgmental tone. It's saying, I love you. Here's something. Let's do this together. Mm-hmm. And that's a completely different posture than the way we do it. The way we do so many things is we slide our glasses down and we look over our glasses mm-hmm. and be like, you're, and we do things from a judgmental tone. This is the beauty. It's why your perspective will change on the sport of running the moment you start teaching one of these classes, is because you realize we're all in this together. Yeah. I'm the coach, but I'm no better than these students, because mm-hmm. you start to see all the applications that this sport can expose in our life to living a life for Christ, to having the endurance, the stamina, the drive. All the things we have for this sport are all the things that we have to have an incredible relationship with Christ.
Yeah. Think about this too. If I have a problem with alcohol, Satan is going to use mm-hmm. alcohol to get me to do things I don't want to do. He's going to use it to make my life worse. But if you have an addiction to food or sugar or something mm-hmm. else that's causing the problem that you have to be in worse shape or to not exercise, whatever it is, Satan's going to use that bondage against you. And so don't let him get a foothold on those sure. areas where we don't have to do that. And it'll make a difference in your yeah. life. All right, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts, and that's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, in our world today, so many people are worried about who gets the blame for things. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes it's not productive and not good. But what's the next step? So this one's called perspective. We're obsessed with the words blame and fault. When something goes wrong, we'll go out of our way to make sure everyone knows who is at fault and who is to blame. And we often get that wrong too. Many people will blame others who have nothing to do with their predicament. Others will blame themselves even when they are not to blame. But one thing is for sure, we have a need to blame someone. Well, I'm here to say that in many cases, none of that matters anyway. We would be far better served to move away from blame and onto what are we going to do about it. We may be able to find someone to blame for an injury we sustained or for the fact that we're 30 pounds overweight. Maybe we're responsible for it. Maybe we're not. But no matter whose fault it is, one thing is perfectly clear. It is our responsibility to do something about it. So here's the challenge. How do we make the circumstances we are in, how do we take the circumstances we are in and use it as fuel to create a new future, a healthier future for ourselves? There's a story that goes like this. A pair of twins are born under the exact same circumstances, obviously. One of them is a drug addict and spends time in and out of jail. He is asked, "How did this happen to you?" He responds by saying, "My father was abusive and drank too much. He was very mean to me growing up. How else could I turn out?" The brother was massively successful, was married and had kids, and was living a dream life. He was asked, How did you become successful? He said, well, my father was abusive and drank too much. He was mean to me growing up. How else could I turn out? Are you using your circumstances to build walls around yourself to use as an excuse to be where you are? Or are you using your circumstances to build a fire that burns so hot you can't help but run from the negativity? In running terms, are you struggling to get workouts done because you're making excuses like, I'm tired or I don't feel like it? If so, which of those two scenarios does that fall under? That's right. Those are walls that only serve to keep you from your goals. Instead, build a fire that you can see from a distance that draws you to your goals. For example, if your goal is to run a half marathon in under 2 hours, what does your workout look like to meet that goal? Instead of succumbing to the idea of being too tired, think of how good it will feel to know you did the workout despite being tired. Same circumstances, two completely different ways to look at it. Like the successful twin, find a way to use the situation to motivate you in service to your goal rather than using it as an excuse to give up. God helps us use our circumstances as motivation rather than an excuse by inviting us to see our struggles from His perspective and trust that He can bring good out of even the hardest situations. Instead of letting our past or present hardships hold us back, God encourages us to draw closer to Him, receive His comfort, and allow our experiences to shape us for a greater purpose. In Genesis, Joseph could have given up when his brothers sold him into slavery, but he didn't. He could have given up when he was thrown in jail for something he didn't do, but he didn't. Instead, he saw that God had a plan for his life and turned his bad circumstances into incredible outcomes, all because he stayed focused on what God would have him to do. Are you blaming others for things that have happened to you? Joseph could have sat around blaming Potiphar's wife for his bad circumstances when he sat in jail, and he would have been right. Instead, he took advantage of opportunities to keep moving forward, and in the end, he saved his family's life. What good things are waiting for you at the end of your poor circumstances? Build that fire today.
Man, Dean, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's one of your best ones. It's just the reminder that we all need. We sit in that group of trees and we just complain and mope and you're saying the same thing that we talked about earlier. It's rising above, getting above the trees and seeing, okay, this lamppost is going out.
Yeah.
Where's the next one?
Yeah, and I'm not trying to minimize people that go through hard circumstances because we all go through hard circumstances. Some people go through some really horrific circumstances, and my heart goes out to them. But the question is, when are you going to move on? Yeah. When are you going to use it? You know, you grew up with a father that had an issue with alcohol.
Sure.
And you don't have an issue with alcohol.
Sure.
You could have used that as an excuse to go, well, my dad did it, so, you know.
It's in our family.
Right. You know, it's in our family. But you didn't, and you don't. And there's two ways to look at everything.
Yeah.
And man,
because that is you hear people say break the family curse.
Yeah.
I mean that was a curse on my family. That was my dad did, my uncles did, my grandpa did, my great grandpa had a problem with alcohol. And that is a curse if you allow it to be. And that's the key. It's a choice. You allow these things to continue, or you say, nope, I'm going to do it different. And that is a choice that by, you know, the grace of God, you can make.
Yep.
And you can beat it. And I'm living proof of that.
And you looked at it as, that's the picture I don't want my life to be.
Sure.
Rather than, you know, using it as an excuse. Let me tell you a funny story.
Yep.
So this person that I know, who will go nameless. When I played golf, I played a lot of golf at one time in my life. And gosh, I would, you know, you have those bad days on the golf course. You get so frustrated.
Is there ever really a good day on the golf course? I mean, it's a great day because the sun's shining and you're out in beautiful grass, but is there ever, that's what Holly asked me I don't mean to cut you off. She asked me last time I played golf, she was like, do you ever come home and say you played great?
Yeah.
And the answer is no.
Yeah. Yeah. We always want to do a little
bit. Sorry, I digress.
That's okay. Because I got to that point where about once every 2 weeks, I would just have a meltdown on the golf course. You can imagine me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know me. And so I would holler and scream. I would yell. I would throw golf clubs. And I remember throwing my golf club once and wrapping it around a tree and deciding that I bent my golf club. And I decided I'm going to keep using that club just to teach myself a lesson. So I used a bent sand wedge for years. But anyway.
So when you finally bought a straight one, you couldn't hit it.
Right, right. But anyway, one day I'm out playing with this person. And this person was in a sand trap and had a really difficult time getting out of the sand trap. And they started beating the fire out of their golf bag. Just lost it. Completely lost it. And I looked at that and I thought, I'm going to stop doing that because that looks silly. And from that day forward, I never lost my temper on the golf course again because I thought, I don't want that to, I guess I've looked like a moron.
It's all about that perspective.
It really is.
Yes.
We see this in sports all the time too, where what we call it bulletin board material, right?
Right.
Somebody does or says something inflammatory, and instead of being offended by it, teams will use that as motivation.
Sure.
It's a negative thing. But they use it as a positive thing, and they use it to fuel their fire. And I think we need to do more of that. And the problem is, here's an example of a way that we avoid the bad news. So I hear a lot of people say, and I completely disagree with this, you might be that person that needs to do this. I'm fine. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying a lot of people say, don't weigh yourself every day.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you weigh yourself every day, you get discouraged because you don't see the numbers going down. Mm-mm. And it's bad for you. Well, I got up to 182 pounds at one time. I weigh 152 now.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I got there and I thought, I looked at my brother who was 300 pounds at the time. And I thought, he didn't get there overnight.
Mm-mm.
He got there by letting it go a little bit at a time. And I thought, I'm not going there. This is my limit. I'm going to start losing weight. And so what I did is I went and I weighed myself every single day.
Sure.
And if the number was higher than I wanted it to be, I used it to motivate me to do better. Mm-hmm. If the number was lower than I thought it might be, then I got excited about the fact that it was lower. You can do both at the same time. And that's the way we ought to look at things rather than going, oh, I don't want to hear the bad news.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you can wander in to the things you don't want in your life. Can't wander into the thing that you want for your life. You have to be intentional and systematic. It's kind of like we talked about, you know, weight and eating being taboo in the church, but we also have these things in our prayer life, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's things that one of those dangerous prayers is, search me, O Lord.
Yes.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
That is a prayer that many times, I'm just not going to go there today. God won't, he won't think about that. But the only way to fix whatever that is to open the door and say, God, search me.
That's right.
Bring those things to my life. But anytime we try to push things to the shadows, it never gets better. It's
right.
It's kind of like having a cancer diagnosis. And the doctor says, you need chemo. And we say, no, I'm just not going to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a good recipe.
That's exactly right.
But
can you imagine how somebody would, I mentioned Joseph in here. Can you imagine how somebody would, with social media today, the way they would be trashing Potiphar's wife online?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? So where he was obviously treated bad and he would, and of course we'd have both sides of it.
Yeah.
We'd have the pro Potiphar side.
Sure.
And we'd have the pro Joseph side and they'd be arguing with each other and it would just become this big thing. When what Joseph did is he just put his head down and he said, I'm just going to do what God wants me to do. And in the end, it'll work out.
Yeah.
And it did.
Yeah.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share helpful tips each day along with encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, it is just a click away to get started today. Every week I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. And this week it's this. It's all on you. You know, a cyclist can blame a flat tire. A hitter can blame a bad call or a bad bat. A running back can blame a bad offensive line. But in running, you only have one person to blame, and that is yourself. I mean, you know, we can have some injuries, but even then, very often, it's how you deal with those injuries and how you get over them that determines your success. And so if you're not successful with your running, your walking, your fitness in general, most of the time, you can just blame yourself.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the whole summary of this podcast, right?
Yeah.
It's personal accountability.
Yeah.
It's what do you have to do? What do you have to do? What actions do you have to take to be the best you can? Yep. And it all relies on us. And don't look around for others to blame.
Yep.
There are reasons, but don't let them be excused.
That's right. Yep. God is telling us pretty loudly and clearly to tell people this for some reason this week. Well, talk about blaming others for other things and not owning up to your problems. Let's talk about the world relays. This past week, the World Athletics had world relays. I didn't realize the world relays have been going on now for 11 years. They go back to 2014. And I thought they were a pretty new thing. But the world relays, they run the 4x100 relay, the 4x400 meet relay, and the mixed relay. This year, they added the mixed 4x1. They all had the mixed 4x4. Now they have the 4x1 as well, which, by the way, I need to pick on them a little bit here. When the world relays were first set up, they had a 4x1500 meter race. They discontinued that after the first year. Then they had a distance medley race, and they discontinued that after 2 years of doing that. I don't know why they don't want to put distance runners in these relay races.
Well, I was going to say, do they not have a 4x8?
Nope. Not even a 4x8. It would be great if they would.
Sure.
But anyway, so here's what happened in those, you know, the USA, of course, dropped the baton in the first round of the 4x1 mixed relay. It was the first time it had ever been contested, so it was a good opportunity for the United States to, you know, we've got the best sprinters in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Should have been a big deal, but we dropped the baton. Mm-hmm. So, and then somehow the men's 4x4 didn't even qualify for the finals. How in the world that can happen? It's crazy. But then they ran the consolation round, and if they'd have run the same time they ran in the consolation round, they would have won their heat, but mm-hmm. they wound up finishing too far back. The men's 4x1. Got walked down over the last 100 meters, which is unusual for any United States team to get beat in the last 100 meters.
Explain what walked down is.
Outkicked.
Okay.
Yeah. So Akane Simbine from South Africa passed Brandon Hicklin in the last 100 meters of that race. We had one bad pass, probably cost us, but Akane Simbine is a big deal. I didn't realize this until this past week. Akane Simbine broke one of Usain Bolt's records.
Hmm.
He has run under 10 seconds now 11 years in a row. That's never been done before. Usain Bolt had the record at 10 years, and now he has broken that record. He's done it 11 years in a row. That's pretty impressive.
Hmm.
So getting beat by Akane Simbine is not the worst thing that can happen to you, mm-hmm. for sure. In the men's 4x4, South Africa won that too. So the South Africans are doing really well. And the Spain also outperformed a lot of teams and did well, better than they thought they would. The women's 4x1 wound up finishing fourth, which was a surprise. Great Britain was the winner. Spain was second. So that was interesting. And then the women's 4x4, again, the U.S. got beat in that last lap, this time by Spain. And I think we had won the women's 4x4 at every relay since it started. This is the first time we ever lost. Yeah.
In the mixed 4x1, Canada wound up winning. Jamaica was second. Great Britain was third. Of course, we weren't there because we had dropped the baton in the first round. And in the mixed 4x4, of course, we came through and we set a meet record time. So they ran well. It is important to note, though, that on these world relays, we don't send our best. There are some good runners there, to be sure. There were certainly some good runners in the men's 4x4 or 4x1 that got beat, but they're not the best sprinters we have. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's a little disappointing, but it's because we don't have our absolute best there. And some countries do send their best. So Brandon Hicklin, the guy who was the anchor leg for the 4x1, he's from Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. Spartanburg, South Carolina, of course, if you don't know, is where Upward Sports is headquartered.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Well, how about a trivia question for this week? This is a simple, straightforward one, and it's this. What is the chemical energy compound that makes our muscles work? And the hint is it's abbreviated by three letters. Mm-hmm. We just need the three-letter abbreviation. Everybody knows what that means.
I don't think I could tell you what those letters mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it's long words.
One of those long medical terms.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So if you know the answer to that, or maybe you've Googled it or perplexed it, and you
want to... I still have not got on there yet.
Send that to dean@upward.org. Be the first person to send in the correct answer, and you will win $20 off in the Upward Running store. Our motivational thought of the week comes from Jim Rohn. He said, "Take care of your body. It's the only place you have to live." That goes right along with this whole podcast, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. We talked about taking care of our body for spiritual reasons, but this is another reason. You know, why do we clean house?
Yeah.
We clean house because we want to live in a nice place.
Sure.
Well, shouldn't we do the same thing with our body? It just makes sense.
Yeah.
Letting our body go is like just letting all the trash pile up in our house and not clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
So get cleaning. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.